This is the Eurosnob Podcast.
So here we are once again. It's end of February. Season is over. Back to the same old Wenger in, Wenger out questions. Same questions about the team's makeup and their intestinal fortitude and whether or not we need to blow it all up. Deja vu all over again. Alex, why? What is it with this team and deja vu?
It feels like Groundhog Day, doesn't it?
Dude, every single year we get to this point in the season and it's the same damn thing. I forgot to mention, we come out of the Champions League, or come out of the group stage, get destroyed by Bayern. Same shit, different year.
Yep, it's like, where have I seen this before? Oh, wait, it's been 9 or 10 years in a row. That's where I've seen
it's
it before.
Typical Arsenal. It's very cliche. It's very, you know, the epitome of the stereotype about Arsenal, but it's true.
Yeah, and I know we haven't had a chance to chat since the Bayern game, but I mean, that I think that result and the manner of that result kind of triggered some reactions from Arsenal fans.
Is it bad that I wasn't shocked at that result, though?
No, of course not. I mean, like, I thought we would lose, but I was thinking maybe 3-1. Because at least,
yeah, that was, I would agree. That was probably my thought, but
yeah, because at least then you're in the tie because you have like a legitimate shot there. But I mean, the great thing about Arsenal is when they commit to something, they really go full force. So when they wanted to collapse, they went all out, and you got to respect that. I mean, it was like, I mean, we're not going to get into that game too much, but just one thing that kind of exemplified the whole thing was, I don't remember which goal, it might have been their third or fourth goal. And Mustafi's pointing at Bellerin to get tight to someone. Meanwhile, Lewandowski or Thiago, I can't remember which one, is literally running right past Mustafi for an easy finish. And it was just the funniest thing because for all this talk about pointing and having someone who takes charge, the one time someone decides to do it, they completely forget their own job. But in a kind of looking at the larger picture, I mean, let's be honest. Like you said, none of us were shocked, but at the same time, have we reached the point of enough is enough?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, on that Bayern result, for me, it wasn't shocking. It's been a weird season, you know. I kind of want to go take this back a little bit before I make that point I was about to make. Give a little bit of background onto it. But in past seasons, we've at least shown flashes of being in really good form. And, you know, we've been in good form and not gotten results in past years. When's the last time we actually were good? Is it Watford, like the fourth week of the season?
It's funny, I mean, you say that, yeah.
I'm sure we've had another game or two in there where we've looked good against Southampton's reserves or, I don't know, some other shitty team. But not once this year have I really thought, you know, we've got a team that plays well. We've got a team that can, you know, take a top team to the edge. I mean, yeah, I think we've had a lot of late goals this year that have really masked the major issues in this side.
Oh yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's been a lot of the deficiencies that I think some of us maybe saw but refused to acknowledge started showing up when those late goals started drying up. You know, I mean, look at some of the results we had early in the season. Remember we had the penalty, you know, the penalty given to us against Burnley or Southampton, or, you know, all these different late results we had where we were picking up points but not necessarily playing well, which you can get by with like once in a while. But if you're trying to make a whole season of it when you're trying to challenge for the title, it's just not practical. And now we've seen kind of everything come apart at the seams. And I mean, you're talking about the last time we saw us play well. I mean, I would maybe look to that West Ham game away where we won like 4-5-0.
Against a West Ham team that had their, I don't know, three best players out.
Yeah, exactly.
So I had played, but they're missing a whole bunch of guys injury.
So, I mean, there really hasn't been an extended period of good football, you know what I mean? And so
give me a full 90 minutes of good football before we talk about multiple games, you know?
Well, it's funny because like if you if you flashback a year, a year and a little more than a year, so a year and a couple weeks, we were coming off a last minute win against Leicester where we were 2 points within the title, and it all fell apart right after that. This year, we haven't even bothered to keep it close into February. We've been out of it before then in the league, obviously Champions League more than likely, that's done. actually not even more than likely. Yeah.
That just made me laugh when you said more than likely. I don't know.
I mean,
it's like legitimately that was just really funny.
I mean, the only scenario where that changes is if Bayern gets someone sent off in the first minute and we also score a penalty at that time.
No, the only way that's possible is if Neuer gets sent off early. Like exactly. Three guys get sent off in the first 5 minutes and Then maybe.
And even then, we would probably give up an Arjen Robben goal from the right to the left because that's what we do. But I know certainly you've got some feelings on how things have unfolded. I'm certainly curious to hear.
It just, for me, man, it seems like there's a real issue at the core of this team. And I'm not really sure what to point to other than, well, quite frankly, I'm not sure what to point to at all. There's just something that was definitely masked where we say, hey, look, they have this thing this season where they're getting these late goals and coming back and winning. You know, I know we talked about it, at least I did, talked about earlier this year on the podcast saying, how come when Chelsea or United or Spurs do it, it's you know, it's a champions kind of win. They have the grit and the heart to pull it out. When we do it, it's we got lucky. Well, maybe we did just get lucky. You know, it's really hard to put your finger on what it is. It goes back to that cliche headline that always refers to Arsenal's weak mentality. And, you know, we talk about how it always just a media-driven narrative. It's a narrative about this and that, but there is definitely an issue with this team's mentality, and I'm not really sure what it is.
Yeah, it's interesting with the mentality thing. I mean, you know, sometimes I don't always like that argument because I think it glosses over tactical issues and formational issues and things like that that I think
are... There's definitely some of that, and
oh, yeah.
I've got some thoughts on that for sure.
Yeah, and a lot of that stuff I think is usually more important than the grit and heart and mentality, but... Where I would agree with you is that, you know, like even when we have seen changes in personnel or tried different things, you've kind of seen the same issues pop up. And so, you know, at some point, the psyche that kind of goes into an athlete's psyche does come into question because, you know, you're seeing these typical collapses. When one thing goes wrong, all of a sudden three or four things go wrong, and it's difficult to just chalk that up to tactics. You know, there is a human element to it that I think we kind of lose sight of, where, you know, these guys are kind of frail, in my opinion. You know, like there are some guys in the squad that obviously, you know, you wouldn't call frail. Like you wouldn't call Alexis frail or a guy like Lucas or Danny Welbeck, but by and large, there does seem to be something off with the collective psyche of the team.
Well, when you, I'm with you there. And when you look at the spine of our team, I'm going to disagree with you on Alexis there. I think he is frail. I think when things start to go poorly in the game, he tries to do it all himself, but that's because he starts getting so frustrated. He can't keep the, you know, I'm going to use the word again, mentality. I need to come up with a better word than that, but he isn't able to say, okay, it's not going well, but let's stick to stick to the game plan that we set out to accomplish poorly, and it becomes the Alexis show. You know, it's, we thought, you know, this is a problem that we saw, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 years ago? And it was a major thing with us. You know, the post-Cesc and Van Persie teams where, you know, that really was the main criticism about an Arsenal side, is that they're just weak mentally. And we thought we were past that. I know I certainly did. I thought bringing in the likes of a Mustafi and a Xhaka, some experienced international players. I mean, even somebody like Lucas, who a 27-year-old who's had to work his ass off to get to where he is. I thought the sign, adding Petr Cech in goal the year before, I thought we were past these issues, and it, for some reason, something just went wrong with this team, and it's worse than it's ever been, really, than it's been in a really long time.
It's funny if you think about it. Well, it's not funny. It's actually sad. The team with, you know, Gervinho and Benayoun and Rizitsky playing, like, you know, starters minutes.
Josie Benayoun, my God.
Yeah, I mean, like, that team.
That's a name.
That team was able to get third, if I remember correctly. This team might not even get third. This team might not even make top four. You know, it's going to be a struggle just to make top four.
And to be fair there, I think the sides around us are better.
Yeah, right now, but we're also from a talent perspective, we're way ahead of that team.
Yeah, for sure. Know?
I mean, that team was Van Persie and, to a lesser extent, Theo, and then Alex Song, and not much else.
That was the year that Van Persie just went off, right?
Yeah, that was the year that Van Persie pretty much carried us to top four. He also promptly fucked up right after that, but whatever. Well, I'm not bitter at all. No.
Speaking of him, just a little sidebar. I saw an article kind of the other day about how he thought he had no idea that Ferguson was going to leave. That was going to be his last year. So he signed on, assuming that he was going to be able to play for Ferguson for a few years. And then a year later, he was like, Ferguson didn't tell him when he signed him that he was retiring at the end of the year. So
he got his title, though. That's the.
Yeah, but I think you still laugh at him a little
bit. Oh, yeah. But at the to the extent where he promptly fell apart right after that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would take you off your train.
No, no, not at all. But so, you know, you're bringing up this thing about like what's happened to the team. And we've mentioned different groups of players over different seasons, but there seems to be one common link. And, you know, it's the hot button issue for Arsenal fans all over the world these days. You know, and I hate putting it down to the two camps, but for all intents and purposes, it is the AKBs, the Arsenal knows best, and then the Wenger out brigade. I mean, I think most Arsenal fans fall somewhere in the middle, where they can, they're not latching themselves to a camp, but they do have an inclination either way. And kind of something I wanted to get into, because I know you more than me have been a staunch Wenger supporter, you know, even in periods that we've struggled. And I'm curious if you still feel that way. And if not, what has kind of brought about a change of mind, or if so, what gives you continued faith?
I mean, I know we kind of touched on this a while back, and I was definitely to the point where I was like, you know what, Arsene Wenger, it's time to go. It's looking back at it, he should have left after the second FA Cup win. That would have been, hey, okay, I won a second trophy in a row, I'm going to step away. But we know he's not just going to step away and, you know, drift off into the sunset or go work on TV. He said this year he's managing somewhere, whether it's at Arsenal or somewhere else next year. So he's not going anywhere. I mean, he's not as far as he's still going to be managing, right? So obviously he still has that desire. Dude, podcast makes an appearance again. yeah, so I can pick my train of thought back up. When did I think it was time? I don't remember what point in time in the season it was, but it was after a similar result to this Bayern result where you just don't see the fight in the players anymore. Like, I'm gonna take it back. kind of a little bit of a crossover, do a different sport. I'm a big hockey fan. I'm from Buffalo. Like we live and breathe hockey up here. Basically, we're Canada. And the Sabres had a coach, Lindy Ruff, who was with the team for a really, really long time. I don't know, 12, 13 years, something along those lines. I was at a game with my now wife, and the team got beat 4-1. Walking back to the car after the game, she looked at me and she says, "I think he's going to get fired after this game. Like, that just didn't – like, that was bad." Sure enough, you hear his press conference after, and he's just, you know, dejected. He's like, "I'm out of answers. I don't know what to do anymore." First thing the next morning, he was fired. You get to a point in time with every coach and every manager, and it seems like nowadays it happens more often. But you get to a point where the message gets stale, and that person is unable to get through to the players and motivate the players. And I know they're professionals and they should be motivated on their own, but if they're tuning out the coach's message, the manager's message, there comes a point in time where you're not getting that back no matter what the manager does. And for me, that Byron result, that was what I saw in that game, was the same exact type of quit that I saw from that Sabres team years back when Lindy Ruff got fired. And like I said, I know it's a different sport, but I think the concept kind of carries over at least a little bit.
Do you think it's one of those things though, where, you know, when certain results have gone against us in recent years, like I'm not going to point to a specific game, but maybe the players turn and think, "Oh no, here we go again." And, you know, they're like, "Oh, is the manager going to do anything to change this or turn this around?" I mean, we don't know what he's saying behind closed doors, but do you think beyond just like tooting him out, do you think they just don't know if he's got the answers, you know, like to where they're still trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but, you know, he's not necessarily able to provide anything new to them?
Well, he sure as hell doesn't try and do anything new. We roll the same line up the same tactics out every single game. So for me, I mean, think about it as a player. If we're trying to do something that doesn't work, I mean, shit, this personal example back in high school, same thing. Playing in a game, getting torn apart in the midfield by this team's opposing center midfielders. Playing it the way my coach said to play it. And it just didn't work. Now, we made the decision to take it upon ourselves and go against what my coach was telling us to do, and he certainly wasn't happy about it. But it worked. You know, had we kept doing what the manager said, like my coach said, we would have been in big trouble. So if these players, you know, and I think that brings up another interesting thing, is that if they do think that what the manager is saying isn't going to work, and it's not working, why not do something different? Like,
do you think it's,
well, I don't know.
I mean, with that though, I wonder if there's such a, not a fear, but there's just such a respect factor for him that somehow they would almost feel guilty going against what he said. But it brings me back to something I heard like 2 years ago. If you remember, we beat City away like 2-0. You know, where we played like a really good tactical game, and people were saying, "Oh, well, you know, I heard that the players kind of took it upon themselves and went against the shape that Wenger was talking about." And I didn't really give it much credence at the time, but I wonder, like, maybe it was one of those one-off kind of situations where they did that, you know?
That's right. That was one of the games where we sat back and kind of absorbed some pressure and countered, and I think I'm thinking of the same game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I remember we scored like on a penalty and a free and a set piece, you know. So
yeah, I mean, sure, maybe there is that respect level, and certainly that would be justified. But that's where your leadership needs to, and maybe that's the issue. Maybe this team really lacks a true leader in the side, where if you're the captain of the side and your whole dressing room or your, even just your top players have this feeling that what the manager is saying doesn't work, your captain, your leaders have to be able to go to that manager and say, hey, this isn't working. We need to figure something else out. I mean, shit, that goes for any job. That's not just in football. That's in life, man. You have to be able to do that.
And I wonder with that, like, we might have had this discussion early on in the season, but I've always felt it was a problem to have a captain that doesn't play regularly, you know, because I don't think you command the same respect or have the same authority with the guys around you. Like, I know Mertesacker is the club captain. I know everyone loves him. Like, I heard this interview with Danny Welbeck where he's saying, like, Pear helped him through his injuries, and that's wonderful. But when times get tough, like, you want someone who's actually performing on the field consistently to be the one who can speak up on your behalf. And I wonder if that hurts us, because if you look in previous seasons, it was what, Arteta last season with Mertesacker's co-captains. But then it was Arteta before that, like when he was injured. You know, Vermaelen when he was here was captain, but wasn't even regularly in the team. And I do think that hurts to some extent. But, you know, kind of going back to just the Wenger situation as a whole, you know, another criticism that kind of gets thrown at him is that players, you know, we talked about the respect and fear, but maybe players feel too comfortable under him to where they know their spots aren't going to be up for grabs. You know, you see, and I tried to think, well, who would that really pertain to? Like, who feels like they could coast into the side and not put in the effort, you know, because I think it was one of those things thrown out. And I was like, well, you know, Ozil's one, he knows his position more or less isn't up for grabs. Walcott, for the most part, you know, it probably falls under that. You know, Monreal to some extent. I mean, I'm not going to, there's no point like pointing fingers at certain players, but I do wonder if you think there's any merit to that argument.
Certainly in other seasons where we have had a deep enough squad, I've thought that. This year, I haven't gotten that impression. You know, I mean, generally since November, we haven't had much choice for our midfielders. I mean, yeah, Ozil's pretty secure in his position where he's going to start no matter what. We thought Alexis would be that way, but that's sure as hell not true because Wenger likes to put Giroud back in up top. You know, I could see somebody like Lucas who, if you have seen any of the reports somewhat recently, that he's not happy.
Can you blame him?
No, not at all, because all he's done is perform for us, and yet he gets put behind Ox and Walcott every single time. And, yeah, so, I mean, certainly in past seasons I've thought that. I don't get that impression this year. Maybe that's just – I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But it's definitely – there's definitely something along those lines where it's – I don't know if it's necessarily comfort. It's just more of a – I get the feeling that we go into games thinking we're not going to win. I don't know how really to explain why I feel that way. We just don't have the confidence – And I don't want to say arrogance, but we'll use that word for now, that a lot of previous Arsenal sides have had. We don't play with that flair that we used to play with. And for me, that comes entirely down to a belief that you're the better team, that you're going to win the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think, and I think another, sorry to jump in just again, but another sign of that is that when one thing goes wrong, another thing goes wrong, and it just kind of piles on. It just seems like there's a real lack of confidence in our side.
No, I do think there's something to that domino effect theory, because with us, I mean, maybe because I watch us more than anything else, but with other teams, you know, like when I look at Chelsea this season, like even if they give up a goal early on, you just don't see them like get shaken up by that. Like you see them just continue to play how they play, kind of with this confidence that they're going to get it back and go from there. And, you know, with us, while we can look at all the tactical stuff and things like that, you know, I do think ultimately there is some, there is something to that, you know, so I would agree there. And, you know, all this discussion kind of comes back to the same point, unfortunately. And at this point in the season, for me, just speaking for myself, there's nothing Arsene Wenger could do for the rest of the season, realistically speaking, that would make me think he should resign and come back next year. And I say that as someone who loves the man, who respects the man for everything he's done for the club, and just all the incredible memories he's brought. But the way this club is heading right now, I worry that he'll undo all of the goodwill he's built up, because with a lot of fans, he's already lost some of that goodwill. But
that's typical Arsenal fans right there, though.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you're seeing that mindset start to permeate to the more level-headed ones, you know, and I'd like to consider myself level-headed for the most part, you know.
Excuse me. I like to think I am too, but more and more recently, I'm starting to think the opposite. So, excuse me.
No, but I mean, I think for people like us and the vast majority of Arsenal fans, I think we're able to take things on their proper perspective. So if it was just like a couple of bad losses in a row or a couple bad seasons, I think we'd all understand that. But when we're seeing certain patterns of poor play and tactical mistakes and the inability to adapt to situations, I think it's very fair to start getting frustrated with that. And you know, because especially when you're seeing clubs around you improving and adapting and the game itself is adapting and changing and always evolving. And I don't know if we're evolving with it. And I don't know if we can do it with this manager.
Yep. I don't know that I could have said it any better myself there. It's not going to make for an interesting debate on this topic, because both of us are firmly in the it's time for Arsene Wenger to move on. We're both in that camp. So, but and like I said, and for me though, I think it's slightly different, because I go back to the point I made earlier. It just seems like his message isn't getting through to this team anymore. There's just that weird vibe that you see with the team, that they're not playing for him. You know, sure, if they were giving everything they had and fighting to the last, you know, to the last second and just not getting the results, sure, I mean, that's one thing, but we're not seeing that, at least not in my opinion.
No, I agree. And it's been rare in recent years where I've gone into a big game and felt confident about it, you know, where I'm looking at our lineup and I'm thinking, oh, this team, the 11 guys he's put out are going to get the job done, because we're going to set up the right way and we're going to get it done. It's been so long since I felt that. And the thing about Arsene Wenger, he's stubborn. You know, I think we can all admit that he's a romantic of the game, in the sense that he has a very specific idea of how he wants his team to play, free flowing, go out there and express yourselves. And I don't think he necessarily gives lots of tactical instruction before they go out, or if he does, I'm certainly not seeing it. And I respect, and I love the attacking football we played over the past, however many years he's been with us. But even that is starting to fade away, where I don't think the stuff we play is great.
Think we've seen that since probably early on in the year.
Yeah. And so like you look at the team as it is now, it's basically fallen apart because one central midfielder hasn't been in the team for most of the season. And the fact that our entire system was largely based around a 30-plus-year-old midfielder in Santi Cazorla, and as soon as he went out, all our creativity, all our ability to handle a press, all our ability to build from deep is now completely disintegrated. That's on the manager, you know? And I just – it's frustrating to me now, because when I try to watch more games around the world, and I see these really well – you know, well-disciplined, tactically smart teams, but who also play good football. And what, you know, I don't think we check any of those boxes right now. You know, a lot of the times we get by on sheer talent more than anything else.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. But you know what? I don't have a problem with us basing our system around Cazorla. That's fine. I mean, he's an absolutely brilliant footballer. One of the most underrated footballers in England. But when he goes out and you lose that level of player in that position, you can't expect somebody like Francis Coquelin or Granit Xhaka or Aaron Ramsey, who are completely different players. You cannot expect those players to play the same exact game that Santi Cazorla has. Our system hasn't changed. We try and play the exact same way.
Yeah, but so, I mean, I do have to – sorry to interrupt. I do have to pick a bone there, because you said you don't have a problem basing it around that player. When that player is coming off a serious Achilles injury, I do have a problem building around that player, because those injuries don't go away, you know, especially at his age.
That's definitely fair, but, you know, you don't have to play the same way every single time, right?
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
And it's obvious. We know that, but you have to try something different. Obviously when Santi was in there, the way that we were set up to play, the way that Wenger wanted us to play, it worked. It was great. But as soon as he goes out, you need to figure something else out. You can't put that on the players to figure out.
Yeah.
You know, that's and that's fine. Like this whole, like, yeah, base it around one player. And all right, let's look at Chelsea. You're not going to say that their system is based around Conte in the middle, but if they were to lose him when he's not in there, they can't play the same way that they played before.
No, they
whether
they
it's long term or short term, you can't. You have to change the way you play. But we don't do that. We try and play the same way, regardless of who's in the team. And when you have Xhaka and Coquelin, who neither of them can handle a press, what do you expect is going to happen?
And I think that's a great point you just made about Chelsea. Like, if they did lose Conte, the player, not the manager, if they lose Conte, you know, they would probably play like Fabregas and Matic in the middle. But you know that Antonio Conte would then adjust his system to accommodate that accordingly.
Exactly.
With us, you haven't seen that. You've still seen us try to play the same way.
He changed his entire system after we beat them.
Yeah, he went to the three at the back with the two wing backs, and look what that did. So even in beating them, we basically gave them the title.
You're welcome, Chelsea.
You know, so like. And then you know, you look at the midfield situation, and I'm trying not to beat on a dead horse with the Coquelin thing, because I mentioned it even after the Bayern game, you know, when I did my little rant, just the fact that the guy completed 6 passes the entire game, like, that's just not good enough. And so, you know, the fact that we don't have quality backup options of a similar type of player to what we have is an issue to me. Like, if you want that needle kind of player that Cazorla is, who can kind of dribble through central midfield, pick out a pass, but also drive things forward, then if he goes out, you need a similar type of player to put in for him. I don't necessarily buy this thinking of having like a plan B that's completely different. You know, like, it's the same with Alexis. If you're going to start him as striker, I don't think having Giroud as a plan B is necessarily the best thing. I would rather have someone who plays similarly to Alexis that you then plug in, so you're not changing the entire system, you know?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And it's just, you would certainly expect to see us try and do something different. You know, that for me is what has put me to the point where, you know, Wenger just hasn't adapted. But I kind of want to take this into a slightly different area of conversation here. Take it to Mesut Ozil. Now, I think it ties in really well to some of the issues that we're having as a team. I saw on Twitter, it was this morning, you know, we saw the news that came out about Mesut Ozil being sent home once again for being sick. And our good friend Billy O, AFC Gooner O, on Twitter, he says, this comment I'm going to get lambasted for, but sell him. I saw that. I wanted to say, dude, are you crazy? But I thought about it for a second, and I'm like, you know what? Yeah. I agree. Now, I can see by your face, I'm not sure if you agree with me, but you certainly have some interesting thoughts on that point.
No, I'm just surprised to hear you say that, because I know you've kind of
been
one of his staunchest defenders for quite a while, so I guess I'm curious. I want to see where this goes, to be honest with you.
All right, fine. It ties into our tactics, right? When Santi Cazorla was in that midfield, we were able to play a two-man midfield. You can't argue that with Mesut Ozil in the number 10 role that he's playing in midfield. He's not. Essentially, we play a 4-2-2 or a 4-2-2-2. Two center midfielders, two wide midfielders, two forwards. Mesut Ozil, Alexis Sanchez play up top, whoever you have on the wings, and then whoever you have in those two center midfield spots. That's the formation we play. Now, when you play that formation with Xhaka and Coquelin, the control that we have in that midfield is non-existent. The connections that we have to Mesut Ozil is, quite frankly, non-existent. So, the way this team is set up, to accommodate Mesut Ozil as a true number 10, we don't have, other than maybe Aaron Ramsey, a midfielder who can play with only two in center midfield. We don't have it. It's not in our side. And Aaron Ramsey, I'm not really sure necessarily that he fits that role. You think he just fits it better than anybody else on our team. So for me, it comes down to a question of, do we sell Mesut Ozil? Really one of the last true number 10s in the world. I'm not sure there's too many other players that really fit that same role. And I'm sure you'll come up with a couple, but, you know, do we sell him? Or do we pretty much sell everybody else in our midfield? Right? Let's look at Bayern's midfield, for example. You know, they have Vidal and I'm blanking on the name. He scored two goals against us.
Oh, Thiago.
Thiago.
And then Xabi Alonso. That was the midfield three against us. Yeah.
So Thiago played a little higher, but look at the midfield two behind him. Right? And they played that 4-2-3-1 that we go out there and play, the 4-2-2, if you will. And it's not really the same because Thiago comes back a little bit, but you have a midfielder like Xabi Alonso, who can sit deep and dictate the pace of the game. And you have a box-to-box player in Vidal next to him. To be fair, they're both world-class, and that's, you know, I'm not saying we need that caliber of player, because that's crazy, but that style of player.
Yeah, I think...
We don't, like...
I mean, I guess the thinking there... Don't mean to interrupt, but just maybe that was the thinking with Xhaka Ramsey, is that you have that guy who dictates and then the box to box. But Xhaka and Ramsey are nowhere near that level yet, in my opinion. I mean, they could get there maybe in 2-3 years. Xhaka more so than Ramsey at this point.
Ramsey is what he is.
Ramsey, I don't think he's necessarily going to improve that much. Having said that, watch him get sold in the summer and absolutely tear it up somewhere and keep his hamstrings healthy. But
to be fair, I think he's a spectacular player, and that will happen if we sell him.
That actually probably would happen. I mean, I love the guy, but just, I mean, that's a separate issue. Anyways, but, you know, going to the Ozil thing, I can go, I could, I have so many different thoughts on this because, first of all, I think what you said about the two-man midfield is so accurate because I think this without Cazorla, there is no link to Ozil, and he's a guy who needs to get the ball in dangerous positions to make things happen. So if he has a midfield that can't do that, he becomes kind of superfluous, really. And then there's just a big gap in midfield. He's not particularly good at pressing from the front. And, you know, like, I'm not going to question his work rate, actually, because I think he always covers a lot of distance. And even in the Bayern game, I saw him tracking back like hell. But, you know.
Well, he had more tackles than any other player on our side in that game.
Exactly. So it's not an effort thing. I think that's lazy from people. But it's just the way he plays and where he wants to play and where he needs to be successful. You need players behind him who can bring out that in him. And, you know, you use the example of Xabi Alonso and Arturo Vidal at Bayern. Well, when you saw Ozil at his best at Real Madrid, he had Xabi Alonso and Sami Khedira. Same basic premise. Khedira playing as a box-to-box and that kind of that engine and a guy who could carry the ball and then get it forward to Ozil, who could then find his wingers and Benzema. So, you know, he's a player you need to build around if you want to have him in your team. He's not a player that just fits into any team. And the problem with a club like Arsenal is you haven't built around him. So now he's kind of a square peg in a round hole. And so I do see the argument to sell him having set. And you brought up another point. I'm kind of rambling on this, but you said, like, how many legitimate number 10s are there in the world? And you said I could probably think of some. And I was actually thinking while you said that. I was like, I don't know if I could think of that many, honestly. Like, legitimate number 10 playmaker types, you know. You might say, like, a Kevin De Bruyne. Although he can play on the wing, he can play as a 10. But let's, for argument's sake, we'll call him a 10. You know, Coutinho is, he's a 10, but he also plays wide.
And he plays in that front three.
Yeah, so
they don't expect him to play a center midfield role.
With the four, I wonder if the 4-2-3-1 is sort of not dying, but you need a more dynamic midfielder to make that work. And the Thiago example is a great one because he's got such incredible close control, but he is also super comfortable playing deeper in midfield, and he's advanced his game to where he can make those attacking runs and get into the box. And you know, Ozil, he's world class. Don't get me wrong. You don't play for Germany this much and become like an automatic starter unless you're world class. So I don't want people to take away from this, like, oh, we're criticizing Ozil. No, but if we're going to use him the way we're using him now and not putting the pieces around him that he needs, then he becomes a luxury player. That's the issue. Having said that, that could largely be an Arsene Wenger issue. You know, like, who's to say if you bring in another manager, you don't all of a sudden get the best out of him.
And that's certainly fair. To do that, though, you are going to need to – I don't know how you change it other than completely revamping your midfield players in your side. To me, he only fits one formation, one style of play. The type of player he is, and again, like you said, I don't want this, I'm not saying he's not a good player. I think he's absolutely brilliant. He finds space in dangerous areas better than any other player in the world, besides maybe Messi. You know, he's absolutely brilliant the way he thinks the game and the way he sees the game. And some of his little flicks and improv touches are just they're insane, you know. And so I don't want, like you said, I don't want it to come across as me saying he's not a good player. In the Premier League, in today's football, you have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to adapt within a game. You have to be able to adapt game to game. And with Mesut Ozil in your side, unless you're going to play him on the wing, which we know won't happen, that's not going to happen at Arsenal. The only time that's happened, I think that happened maybe a little bit at Real Madrid from time to time, and then he's played there for Germany. But on very rare occasions. That's not exactly somewhere that he's where he's at his best. Excuse me. But it with him in your team, the other team knows exactly how you're going to play. They know how you're going to line up. I don't know. It's difficult for me to say, but I don't see how the way that this team is currently constructed with the players on the team, how you fit him in.
Yeah, I mean, I guess people will point to like the game against Chelsea in September when we blew them apart 3-0 and say, well, look, Ozil played as a 10 there and it worked. You know, we had Cazorla healthy then, and so that obviously changes things. So like, if you are going to do that, you need a player who can link between defense and attack. And if Cazorla is not going to be that guy, you have to buy one in the summer.
So buy Verratti.
I mean, that won't be won't be cheap at all. But
do that, and then maybe we can talk.
But no, in all seriousness, and I'm not going to get off topic. I'm just throwing out a couple of names that I've been reading. There are a bunch of young, legitimately talented central midfielders that I think could play that role. One of my
the kid from Anderlecht.
Yeah, I was actually that's who I was going to mention. Yuri Tielemans from Anderlecht. I mean,
I was about to try and say his name because I knew I'd get it wrong.
So oh no, I might have said it wrong, but I said it so quickly, people might think it's right. I mean,
you said it with confidence, man.
Exactly. So you know, he's a guy who can hit it from distance. He's a good dribbler of the ball, good passer. He can play in advanced positions, but's also comfortable playing deeper. You have a guy like Leandro Paredes at Roma. Slightly different kind of player. You have Naby Keita at Red Bull Leipzig, you know, who's more kind of he's very dynamic, good with the ball at his feet, comfortable in tight spaces, but he's got a lot of ability to drive through midfield. So, and you know, there's a Campbell at Bayer Leverkusen, I think. I don't know, I'm blanking on that. So there are like good young midfielders, but if you're going to keep Ozil, you have to go and get that type of player. Because all of a sudden, if you have like a Xhaka type and then a Tielemans, all of a sudden you have two skilled ball players in midfield, one with the good close control and the other with the amazing passing range, then you can get the best out of him. But if you're going to set up like we set up now, then, you know, I could not fault him for wanting to leave, honestly.
But even, you know, that being said, even if we were to add a player like that, that style of player, we're still only playing a two-man midfield. For me, so much of it's on a tactical side in the Premier League is based on controlling that midfield, the center of the pitch. You control the middle of the field. You control everything else. You control the pace. You control where the game is being played. That's the number one thing you need to set out to control. With Mesut Ozil on your team, you're still only playing a two-man midfield, regardless of the two you have in behind him. You know what I mean?
Do you think you can give him a tactical instruction to play deeper? Do you think a manager like Allegri would be able to get the best out of him by saying, look, you can still go forward, but you need to play deeper?
I don't think he's that type of player. That's not who he is as a player. We've never seen him do that.
Not for Arsenal, at least. Yeah,
exactly. And I just, at this stage that he's in his career, he's a number 10. He's not a central midfielder. He's a second striker. That's what he is. That's how he plays. So to ask him to ensure you can ask him, but I haven't seen a single thing that would make me think that he could actually do it. I mean, he's talented enough that he could. Maybe I should phrase it as that he would do it.
Or that it would be that he would be at his best doing it, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And you I know, think and
let's just like the way I see it is look at the other teams around us. Chelsea plays a three-man midfield, center midfield. Most days United does. They like to switch it up a little bit. Liverpool does, Tottenham does. All the teams around us, the top clubs in England and top clubs, shit, internationally and in Europe, they all play with a three-man midfield. you go up against Bayern with that three-man midfield and you try and roll out two guys in center mid, good luck.
Especially when one of them's Coughlin. Well, Chelsea plays more of a two-man because they've got the 3-4-3, but Conte kind of plays for two.
Exactly, exactly. They have a player like that that can cover that kind of ground.
Exactly.
And really play the role of two players.
Yeah. No, I wonder if the – and I said this earlier, but just thinking more about it, I wonder if the traditional number 10 is a dying breed right now.
I completely agree with that.
So I wonder if there is a shift to either a straight 4-3-3 or a flat, like a three at the back, and then, you know, either 3-5-2 or 3-4-3, whatever hybrid of that you want to use.
God, Arsene Wenger would never make that change.
Exactly. And that's kind of the frustration, you know, that if we're not going to adapt tactically, then you need to at least get the best personnel for the system you have. And, you know, it's kind of a catch 22 because Mesut Ozil, if you want a true number 10, he's the best there is. The problem is in doing so, you have to build around him and we don't have the midfield to do it. Now, obviously that's largely down to the manager, but it is one of those things where, you know, I didn't think I would ever necessarily entertain the thought of Ozil leaving and be, you know, I thought if he left, that'd be a huge blow because he was kind of the first big name to jump on board. And then you have Alexis and then you have Petr Cech. So, you know, I thought it would just kind of start this domino effect of big names coming to Arsenal.
See, I'm going to interrupt and I'm going to go hot take on you right here.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's a little bit of, let's put it this way, a little bit of a buy or sell type of situation.
Okay.
This team would be more effective without Mesut Ozil in the side, meaning we would play a 4-3-3.
And which three?
So let's say side is fully healthy, no more Mesut Ozil. You've got Xhaka, Coughlin, and Aaron Ramsey in central midfield playing a 4-3-3.
Yeah.
As opposed to the 4-2-2-2. No Mesut Ozil on the side. Hot take, this team is better as a 4-3-3 without Mesut Ozil than it is in the current setup.
I'd be lying if I hadn't. If I said I hadn't thought about that, not with Coughlin, obviously he makes everything worse. But I could see a three-man midfield of like Xhaka, Elneny, Ramsey, or Xhaka, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Ramsey. I could see those working because you have three guys who can all play with the ball there. But I could see some validity to that for sure because I think it gives you some control in midfield. You know, the only. Well, not the only counterpoint, but the main counterpoint to that is who's going to create chances out of that midfield. I mean, you'll have legs and you'll have energy, and you know, Xhaka can obviously pass from deep. But then, you know, are you relying on Alexis to create your chances? Are you relying on your wide forwards? And just kind of going back to the system issue, it's not even just Ozil, because I don't think what we do now gets the best out of Xhaka either. You know, like the way he played at Mönchengladbach, he was never left this exposed with the two-man midfield. So, you know.
And the same goes for Ramsey as well, though.
Yeah, you put, well, I mean, in the 4-3-3 point, you look at what Wales did in the Euros, and they basically played a variation of the 4-3-3 where Ramsey could basically play higher up the pitch, but at the same time he had the engine to kind of drop deep, pick up the ball, do it, you know, get forward and kind of grab, make his mark on the game. It sounded like such an English pundit phrase, and I hated it.
That's really what we played though when he had that big season.
No, but Ozil was the number 10 that season.
When was he?
Yeah, remember we had Ozil, Ramsey, Arteta. That was the midfield. We kind of went through that. It was the 13-14 season, and Ramsey had that like 4 or 5 month stretch where he was just unstoppable.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah. No, but to your point though, like he was playing with that deep controller, and I felt like there was more balance in that team, just how it was set up tactically. This one just feels like a hodgepodge of pieces, and right now, unfortunately, Ozil's one of those pieces. I mean, with Ozil, first of all, I think he gets so much undue criticism for his individual performances. But I see the merit to an argument where you're saying if with the pieces we have, he may not be the best fit. So if you can get 45, 50 million for him and then reinvest it, that wouldn't be the worst thing. Having said that, my gut feeling is that Alexis leaves, Ozil stays, and a new manager comes in and tries to do something different with him. And it's not for me to say whether that'll fail or not fail, because, you know, I don't know. It depends on who that new manager is.
Speaking of which, we've seen a lot of links popping up in the last few days, tying Allegri as being our next manager. The latest report from some Italian newspaper said that
Calcio Mercato. Yeah,
there you go. He said he told his best friends at dinner that he was going to be the next Arsenal manager, and then his best friends turned and went to the paper.
Yes, because whenever you have a deep conversation with your friends, your really good friends are going to go tell the paper.
Maybe somebody needed money and sold information. I don't know, but like the idea is out there where, you know, take that with a grain of salt from that paper.
No, I mean, just kind of throwing a little tidbit in there. I've read elsewhere that he is learning English.
He also did to the same type of point. He was in an interview maybe 2 weeks or so ago where the Italian press brought it up to him and said, "Hey, Arsenal, are you the next manager? Like, are you going to pursue that?" He basically said in Italian, "I will neither confirm nor deny that rumor," which I think that says a lot to me right there. There has been contact between him and Arsenal, or Arsenal and his agent. There has to have been, because if there hasn't been, he comes out and says, "No, there hasn't been any contact."
I think, first of all, Allegri is my – I have two top choices. He's like 1A, and Sampaoli at Sevilla is 1B.
Barcelona manager.
Yeah, I would tend to think he goes to Barcelona. I think Allegri seems like the most attainable big name out there. I didn't think he was great at Milan, but having looked back on what Milan did with their squad, I now see why he had any issues there, because it just wasn't a good team. And now at Juventus, I mean, yeah, you can say it's a one-team league. I mean, no, Roma and Napoli are both good teams. Like, you can't just coast and win that league. But his ability to adapt tactically is really remarkable. Like, in their recent game, I think it was against Napoli yesterday. You know, he changed formation like two or three times until he found something that worked within the game, and they were able to pull it out. Like, you've seen him go with a new formation this season, where, you know, Mandzukic has been playing wide left, Dybala has been playing behind Higuain, and I forget who's been playing wide right.
Cuadrado.
Yeah. And that has actually been working. Like, so he takes these pieces he's got and he puts them in different positions until he finds something that works. And he knows how to rotate a squad. Like, he has experience with a big squad and keeping players happy. So, like, I would be all for Allegri. I think he brings a confidence, a defensive solidity. He's not afraid to take on big players, as you've seen with this thing with Bonucci.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I think he should be target one right now. I mean, assuming Sampaoli's out of there, because if Sampaoli's available, I'd make a big play for him too, because he knows how to organize a pressing team. He knows he's obviously got the Alexis link, and I would imagine that keeps him. And he gets the best out of maybe not the most talented squad of players, but you know, we've seen other names thrown on, like Thomas Tuchel, Jardim at Monaco, which I think is an interesting one.
If he brings what's his name with him?
Yeah, if he brings Kylian Mbappe, I say hire Jardim right now, because Mbappe is going to be like a superstar, but I digress, and I'll save that for a later podcast. But
yeah, we've got time for that some other day.
Those are the four names I would look at.
I'm 100% behind bringing in Allegri. I think you're touching on his tactical diversity and adaptability is. I mean, that's what we talked about the whole conversation we had with Ozil, and most of the conversation we had with Arsene Wenger is about tactical adaptability. You know, I think we have an extremely talented side. I mean, shit, we even talked about earlier, part of the problem is we get by on our talent alone most of the time. You know, I think we have all the pieces in place, you know, assuming Alexis stays, or, you know, not, you know, assuming the team is the same, or if you bring in a manager that can get the best out of our players, then we have as much talent as any side in England where we could win the league. Here I go talking about winning the league with a new manager, but I think you get my point is that.
Yeah. I mean, certainly there are spots in the squad that need addressing. Left back is the first one, center midfielder, and then striker if Alexis leaves. But there is enough there to where we should at least be better than what we are. And I think a guy like Allegri, yeah, he might struggle for a couple months just in terms of transition. Although Conte didn't really struggle.
He struggled for a month or
a
two.
A month and a half,
and then they went off on a 12 game winning streak.
But the thing is, like. And I don't think people realize, like, you can be tactically disciplined and still be fun to watch. Like, I find Chelsea, like, entertaining to watch.
Watch Chelsea because it makes me mad when they win.
Well, no, but, like, if you watch them as a neutral, if I put aside my Arsenal fandom and I watch them play, yeah, I'm like, wow, this is a really well-coached team. Everyone knows their role. You know, you see him get the best out of guys like Pedro, who was struggling last season. He's rejuvenated Hazard. He's kept Costa under control. You know, he's turned Moses into a right wing back. You can't look at guys like Marcus Alonso and Victor Moses and guys like that and then say, like, they're just getting by because they spent big. Like, he's taken players that, you know, aren't superstars. I mean, sure, they have superstars in Hazard and Costa. But, you know, other players like that aren't superstars and he's getting the best out of them. So I miss having that feeling at Arsenal where, like,
yeah,
you take good players and make them great, or take great players and make them spectacular.
And I think that comes back to the tech, like the adaptability of your manager. I mean, you should look at Liverpool. In my opinion, they have one tactic. It's go, 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 go. And they're getting found out a bit. They're struggling a little bit. But I think one of the things that Spurs do well is they adapt their tactics to who they're playing. Chelsea adapts their tactics. City not so much. And I think that's part of the reason why they're struggling. The top half of the Premier League is so good and so close together that you have to be able to adapt. You know, and if you can't, then, I mean, part of that goes, even look at Mourinho last year. He refused to adapt his tactics. I mean, that's not the only reason everything blew up in his face, but when you can't adapt, you're predictable. When you're predictable, you're in trouble.
It's funny because I know we're wrapping up, but it's funny you mentioned the Klopp, you know, Liverpool and their one tactic. And I agree with you because I think they are kind of a one trick pony. Having said that, we play them this weekend, and you know as well as I do, we're playing at Anfield. They're going to press us, and we're going to play Coquelin in midfield, and we're not going to be able to handle their press, and we're probably going to get turned over like 2-0 or 3-0.
I was thinking 3-1.
We'll get a goal. So let's say 3-1. I just have this awful feeling about this game. They're going to press. They need a win because they just lost to Leicester. They need a win. And, you know, whenever you play Arsenal, you're going to get a team's best shot. And so I just have a really bad feeling. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I come back next week after like a 2-0 comfortable win. But the only solace is, and I never thought I'd be safe.
Comfortable win, sorry. Go ahead.
The only thing that is kind of good is that Jordan Henderson is supposedly out. And I never thought I'd be celebrating Jordan Henderson not playing. But when that system is at its best, a guy, he's in it, you know, because he fits it for whatever reason. I don't know why, but he does. He's not playing, or supposedly not playing. So if he doesn't play, I'll feel better about our chances. But if we go with Xhaka and Coughlin in midfield, holy Moses, we're in trouble.
Dude. Oh yeah, that's the thing. And it's those two against whatever midfield three that Liverpool puts out.
And let me just say this. It sucks that Xhaka's name is being dragged through the mud because he has to carry that passenger Coughlin around.
I know, okay, Xhaka fanboy. It's not all him carrying Coughlin, because Xhaka has been exposed a bit in his own right.
Yes, when he's left alone defensively, yeah, he's kind of useless, and his tackling is terrible. I don't think he knows how to tackle. But in terms of seeing the best of him from a passing perspective, I mean, he's oftentimes playing 1-on-3 in possession, you know?
Exactly, and he's also very predictable. You know he's going to turn it to his left foot.
Yes, he is very, very one-footed.
And was it against Liverpool before where we gave up a goal because he turned to his left foot directly into a pressing Liverpool player? Maybe it wasn't them, but
I don't remember. I don't think it was Liverpool, because
maybe not. The same. I'm having nightmares of that too. Just ball coming into their feet, not having any idea what to do with it, and us getting caught for 2 or 3, maybe even 4 goals. I don't know. I have a really bad feeling.
That sounds like a lot of games that we played, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. I could just see it. I could see this season, the end of the season, really snowballing. And I hope it doesn't. I really hope that we can go on to win the FA Cup. And Arsene Wenger can walk out with another trophy. But I could also see this season really going downhill very, very fast.
And the sad thing is, I don't know if it would affect me that much if it did.
No, we talked about it a little bit before we recorded that. I don't remember, to be honest with you, the last game that I've watched start to finish. That's for the first, literally for the first time in 7 years of being an Arsenal supporter.
Yeah, I mean,
that I've been that checked out.
I didn't even watch the Sutton game, honestly. Because usually when we have games during the week, I TiVo them because I'm at work, and then I avoid the result and I come home and I watch. I did that for the Bayern game. Look how that turned out. I didn't watch the Sun game. Like, I still try to watch every game to the extent I can, but the losses don't bother me as much as they did anymore. Like, it's one of those things where it used to kind of ruin my day or even my weekend. But now at this point, if we lose, I'm like, all right, you know, I'll tell my fiance, you know, you want to go get some breakfast now, you know. And it's sad that it's come to that. And I think that sort of resignation throughout the Arsenal fan base is another reason why I just think a clean break from Arsene Wenger is needed. I do hope we hear some sort of announcement within the next month as to what the managerial future at this club is, one way or the other, because I don't think the indecision helps anything. But certainly we'll keep our eyes and ears peeled for that. But
I think just a word you just used there, there's a resignation in this side, the resignation that we're just not gonna win, or we're not gonna win the title, we're not gonna win a trophy, we're not gonna get past Bayern. There is that feeling. That's a word that I couldn't get to earlier, but it's exactly what I see in this team. So
on that uplifting note.
Yeah, right. It's uplifting. God, it'd be nice if we could be uplifting about an Arsenal, about Arsenal, right?
I wish, man. I really do. It's tough because I think we're, when it comes to Arsenal, we're both relatively optimistic, and I think even the most optimistic fans have had that sort of drained from them. You know, I mean, a win over Liverpool might paper over the cracks, but in all honesty, I don't think it should do very much.
No, it'll be exciting and fun for the 90 minutes of the game, and then afterwards, you're still going to be like, meh.
Yeah, what?
It is what it is. Like, this team, and they're not going to win anything. Sure, they might win an FA Cup, but whatever, it's an FA Cup.
I mean, having said that, if we win the FA Cup, I'll still, like, celebrate like an idiot. But no, but I mean, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, you want to be competing for the Champions League and the Premier League. Obviously, FA Cup would be great, you know, especially because it's not the League Cup, so it at least means something. But
it's a little bit more than that, right?
A little bit more than the League Cup, despite how much the media now wants to spin the League Cup as a major trophy because United won it. Yeah. But I'll leave that for another day. But certainly before we close out, any final thoughts for everyone at home or on the road or wherever you're listening to this?
No, I'm glad to be back. It's been a long time.
Yeah,
I felt a little bit rusty, but it's been a month almost, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, things in real life gets in the way, you know what I mean?
It's adulting, like, bullshit.
Yeah, we got, you know, jobs and new houses,
buying a house,
and yeah, wedding
having to fix it, and Jesus,
yeah, I've got wedding planning going on, so
I just sit back and play FIFA and drink some beer? I just want to do that, man.
Seriously, that's the dream. But so your score prediction for Saturday is 3-1 Liverpool.
Yeah, let's be a little more optimistic. We're gonna win the game 2-1.
2-1. We're going to win. 2-1. Wow.
Alexis and Theo with the goals.
Okay. I say 2-1 Liverpool. I said 3-1 earlier. I changed my mind to 2-1. I say Liverpool score early on. We get an equalizer right before halftime, and then Liverpool score mid-second half and
you know, if that happens, then they score two in the second half, and it's 3-1.
That's true.
But you're trying to hedge your bet, so if we do win, you don't seem like too big of a pessimist.
Exactly. I kept this in it, but no, but it was great to be back on and doing it, and hopefully we can at least come back after a positive result this weekend next week.
Yeah, it'd be nice. I mean, I have no confidence in the Bayern thing actually being a thing.
Oh no,
us getting back into that's long gone. So yeah. Let's get a win and let's get back behind our boys. I know this hasn't been a super positive podcast, but you know, it's still Arsenal. It's still football. It's not the end of the world, but we're still going to go and support our boys every day.
Absolutely. So. That's what being fans all about. But if the people want to reach you on Twitter, where can they find you?
Find me at GunnersFan6.
You had to think about that for a second. I did. That's at Rust. Yeah, and if you want to find me, I'm at UFGoonerAJ. Find the pod at twitter.com/EuroSnobPod or at EuroSnobPod, facebook.com/EuroSnobPod. And go to any of those things and you will find more information. So please like us, subscribe on iTunes, spread the word, do whatever you got to do.
All that stuff. Click a bunch of likes, share. Every time you see it, hit share.
Exactly.
And on that note, before your computer dies and you completely cut out.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
Sign off on this one. Take care.
Take it easy.